Wednesday, the 24th of April, 1 p.m. on the East Coast. A very happy Swizz here. Why am I happy, you ask? I'm glad you asked. The Yankees emerged victorious yesterday. The Rangers of New York, Dan was there.
Yeah,
they won. That was a bit of a nail biter, but you know what? It's playoff hockey. And then just to cap off what was a perfect evening, the Mets lost their third in a row. Nobody cares. Market call, as I mentioned, joined today by the great Carter Worth. How are you fellas doing? Dan, how are you?
We're doing great, aren't we, Carter?
We're here. Yes. We're not knotted up like you, but, you know, we can't all do that.
Well Guy's going to have to jackass his way into this. Guy can't be everywhere at once, and that's just
omnipresent.
Yeah, but, you know, listen, yeah. Guy, you just can't get any joy out of this. I said to him this morning, four New York playoff wins in four consecutive days at Madison Square Garden, and he goes, it's early. Okay, fine. That place was rocking for four nights straight. So pretty cool stuff here in New York City. People are fired up. You got fired up this morning, Guy, because one of the first conversations we had, it was probably 10:01 a.m. There was lots of green on the screens, Carter. You noticed it yourself. Nostradamus over there said, watch this. What were you keying on a little bit where you thought we might give some of this some of those early gains back?
A couple things. I mean, and again, I appreciate that. And if I was wrong, I would have said, I'd be the first to say I thought I was going to reverse and I was wrong. But here we are, and we'll see how the day progresses. But the things that continue to catch my eye, and now I sound like a bit of a broken record, but 10-year yields continue to sort of do the grind higher. But dollar yen now markedly through 155, and we've mentioned a number of times that the Bank of Japan has a problem. And I think in a certain sense, the market's starting to sniff that out. That coupled with the fact that, the VIX was lower, then all of a sudden, just oddly enough, it started to catch a bit of a bid earlier this morning. So those three things that I'm like, that's sort of odd. So listen, I get the Tesla thing. I think NVIDIA was on the back of the fact that I want to say Elon Musk made comments about all the chips they need to buy, but that obviously reversed as well. So there are a lot of things to be staring at 103 on this Wednesday afternoon. We'll see how the day progresses, but this is eerily reminiscent of a couple of days we've seen over the last month and a half.
Yeah, no doubt. And Carter, again, I mean, I think for the last week and a half, we've been saying as Tesla's been careening lower that it's a really bad press on the short side near term. We did some charts yesterday on that. And again, today's 10% bounce in the context of the just decline over the last month or two or six is nothing. You know what I mean? And so talk to us a little bit about that. If you were buying the NASDAQ futures pre-opening because Tesla was bid up 10%. And I think that's what Guy was kind of keying on. And when you saw the reversal of NVIDIA, which was very positively mentioned, Elon Musk out of the Oracle's mouth himself said, we are training models right now on 35,000 H100 chips. And that's going to go up to 85,000 by the end of the year to see the sort of reversal that NVIDIA's had. And then also, and we're going to hit, well, let's go to the rundown really quickly, just to give you a sense of what we're doing here today. We're going to do a little preview on a couple big earnings, Meta tonight, Alphabet tomorrow, Microsoft's also tomorrow. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Tesla, and then we're going to look at the NASDAQ and the S&P 500. But Carter, when you saw this sort of reversal in the mega cap tech stocks, how does that make you feel about the enthusiasm that some investors were feeling about Tesla gapping up 10%?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's always about what your timeframes are. Our view is you want to be either short or not involved, but long Tesla doesn't have a thesis here by my work. And so the question is, obviously, if you are short and you get a pop against you, you can do one of three things. First, you can do nothing. Mm-hmm. Two, you can press the short and say, hey, this is an opportunity to get even bigger because this won't hold. Or three, one could say, hey, the short is now against me a bit. I want to reduce in response to this news-related move higher. My own hunch is that if you're short, you stay. If you're not short at all, take this pop to get short. But this doesn't change anything. In fact, it's very knee-jerk, impetuous, and highly likely to mean unlikely to mean anything.
Well, you know, yesterday in the charts that you had, you highlighted the fact that we're right down against that uptrend that's been in mm-hmm. place for a few years, that's at the lower end of that pennant formation that you've been highlighting. And again, you've been kind of playing for a move back to that, mm-hmm. what, even if you call it, you know, whatever term support. Guy, when you listen to bits of the conference call, you've read a bunch of what they had to say. I mean, there was nothing from a fundamental standpoint that should get you excited about this stock over at least the next few quarters. There was a lot of stuff about the AI and the robo taxi and the autonomy, Optimus, you know, robot and all this other stuff. And Elon even said, if you are own this stock, you know, because you think we're an auto company, that's the wrong reason. And all that other stuff. And Gene Munster said it last night on the show during the conference call that there's going to be this debate, whether it's smoke and mirrors or it's like the hardcore stuff that they're actually doing now in shipping. And to me, I think you know where I stand. I think it's a lot of smoke.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm asking Amanda to do something here, and I apologize. But, you know, Jim Chanos put out a tweet earlier today or late last night. I apologize. But he basically said, Elon, be careful what you wish for, because if you want to be valued in the same way that some of those other companies are valued, you'd effectively be a $90 stock. And he went through the math that and how he got to those calculations. But you're right. And listen, the market got itself excited. And I think that's all you needed to have yesterday. And on yesterday's show, again, I want to be crystal clear. You know, I have been bearish and I thought it probably could break to the downside as well. That was wrong. But what we did say yesterday is you have to move your feet. And it's almost incumbent upon you that if you're short this stock, which I guess most people, you know, are not that are listening here, but it was sort of a tutorial that you had to do something against that trend line, because we held and if we bounced, if you had bought back a third, a quarter, a half of your position, it would have given you the ammunition to do something on the bounce. And that's what happened. If you did nothing, then you're sort of sitting here a bit paralyzed. And there's the, thank you. I knew Amanda could do that. She's so good. There you go. She's so good. Much better hope not, because there, and to your point, now, if you want to get valued at those companies, that's fine, except you're going to be a stock that's trading somewhere between $95 and $100. So yeah. I see the bounce. I see the volume. Let's see how it closes. Nothing that I heard, I don't think, changes the narrative. And just to add on, that free cash flow number was an abject disaster. I don't think anybody saw that coming. And margins continue to contract. So there you go.
Well, all right, really quickly, let's pull up the 1 year chart again. And just, you know, interesting point, that 160 level was really important support, Carter, over the last month. When I say important, near term, right? Like you saw it bounce a couple times over there.
It's come down to a well-defined reference point and has responded to it. But again, if you, it's always this, if you looked at that and someone had removed all the legends and it's just a black screen with white lines, and you'd say, wait, what, something happened today? And you have to get out your magnifying glass to see that little thing on the lower right-hand side. Is that, oh, it went up a bit. Yeah. I mean, listen, nothing changes. This stock is under real pressure, and I guess the business and the company as well.
Yeah, and again, I think to Guy's point, if it fills in that gap, you know, today, for instance, that would be an absolute disaster. Let's pull up a 5-year really quickly, Amanda, if you can do that, because we've been highlighting that quick move that it was late 2022 into January low of 2023, where it basically fell off a cliff from $200 to $100. And you see that kind of move right there. Again, it's just one of the worst looking charts in the entire stock market. And make no mistake about it, this is a $500 billion market cap or just below that. And, you know, Carter, you've been highlighting the fact that, you know, $100 is probably the next reference point.
Ultimately, you know, and getting below that is a stretch for the imagination, unless you really want to take the view that it's maybe not a real thing at all. Can't speak to that. But at 100, I would be putting some money to work.
Yeah, and Guy, just to be clear on this, you know, given everything that they said on their conference call, they had a confluence of really negative events, from Red Sea shipping issues to weakness in China to competitive issues there. I mean, the list, you know, they had a fire.
Higher
interest rates. But here's the one thing that they didn't mention. They did mention a tough macroeconomic environment, but a lot of the S&P earnings that I've heard so far are not talking about a challenging. What did Jamie Dimon just say yesterday? I think it was here in New York, that the U.S. economy is booming and this and that, whatever. So they haven't even had a recession to deal with yet, and they have all these problems. So I guess we can just finish off on that.
And also that fact that GM has acted quite well. Yeah.
So, well, I was just going to say, right? If you could overlay a GM chart with a Tesla chart since, you know, November, I mean, it is a stark comparison of the two. So, you know, I think there's a little of that going on as well. Hey, listen, there's a place to be long and sort of, as Brian Kelly used to say, you know, put that long position in the top desk drawer. I just don't think it's right. Again, my opinion, it's not here. And if you look at this chart that we have on real quick, I mean, nothing has effectively changed. We've still been in a significant downtrend now for the last 3.5 or 4 years.
Yep, no doubt. One thing I will say, that Elon made the point that some of their competitors here in the U.S. are going in for this plug-in hybrid EV solution. He said he does not think that is the way forward for EVs, and that's the bet that they're making. But if it you know, continues to be a very difficult environment for EVs, that is going to be a decision that they continue to choke on. The last thing I'll just say is that if this stock were to go back towards 100 or below it, I think there is a lot of optionality about all those other things that they're focused on. You know what I mean? And then you could start saying, okay, well, this is where the auto business should be valued at relative to where the margins are, relative to where their competitive margins are, relative to their positioning in the EV space and globally and their manufacturing that's all set up. And then you might be able to say, okay, you know what? Maybe $30 a share should be for what they're doing in AI or whatever. You know what I mean? So, but not here yet. Sentiment has not gotten bad enough yet.
And just to put this perspective, I mean, there's so many ways that people can write headlines. Like today, it's
Soaring, surges, all this stuff.
These are the superlatives that is what sensationalizes the nature of journalism. Another way to do it is this. Having dropped 13.65% last week, Tesla is now up 7.4% this week, still down from the week before that. I mean, it's nothing. It's nothing.
Yeah. All right. Let's do a little check here on the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100 here. Guy, just really quickly, you know, on the S&P, you know, you had this, what, I think peak to trough 7-ish or so percent at the intraday lows the other day here. We've got a little bit of it back. You've said a couple times since you've got back from your holiday that you think, you know, it's just a bit of a you know, oversold condition, a little bit of a bounce. You expect the sell-off to resume. What are some of the things that you're keying on most as it relates to the S&P 500? Is it yields?
Well, again, yeah, I think yields are critical. And I think, again, I will emphasize, I just don't think the market's paying enough attention. I obviously mentioned dollar yen. I don't want to get too wonky there. You know, two-year yields, you know, as we get towards 5%, I think that's something the market's going to take into consideration. But most importantly, the technicals, you know, and Carter obviously does a remarkable job with this, but we mentioned it yesterday. The S&P traded down, bounced off the level that should have. You know, Doug Kass, who I, you know, invoked yesterday as well, had been mentioning that, you know, we were in this short-term oversold condition. The market needed to do some work to work that off, and we were probably getting closer. Maybe today's early action did something to sort of offset that oversold. You know, probably not all that much, but even if we went sideways for a period of time, that will work off the oversold condition, and I think we're going to continue our lower trajectory. I'm of the listen. You can believe whatever you want to believe. You know, you have to make some assumptions, but you know, one of the assumptions that I've been making are yields going to go higher. I think yields are going higher for majority of the reasons are negative, and I don't think that's bullish for the stock market. So, under my set of premises, you know, I think we're getting ready for the next leg down.
Carter, what about your set of charts here?
Yeah, let's do it. So we have a chart of the S&P. It's very clear, white background, black lines, right? You got a y-axis, you got an x-axis. It's all pretty straightforward. Let's put some color to it. That's a mathematically parallel set of lines. That's a channel. We overshoot. We make a new all-time high, and now we've fallen back into the channel. We're sort of bouncing along at that upper band. What my eye sees, if we put in the midpoint, is something that has to be considered a reference point. Our peak to trough now is 5.91% until this bounce of the past day or two. But there's a minor topping formation. Let's put that in, and you can see it. And so if and as this ricochet of the past two sessions were to peter out here, that's my hunch, and we resume the sell-off, as a reference point, I would think the midpoint, next chart, is where we're headed. We could flash those arrows just for fun, you know, put like the vacancy sign at the motel there. But the point is, I mean, does that have to happen? Someone else say, yeah, those are great. I love that. But there should be two green arrows up and you're going to make new highs. All right, that's what makes a market. That's what I think is coming. And I would say, again, having moved up for 6 months with no sell-offs of more than 2 to 3%, having advanced 28%, 32% for the Qs, 62% for the Sox, we are now in the process of sort of correcting that fairly steep and uncorrected advance.
Yeah, Guy, we talked about it a little bit. The Jan 2022 high in the S&P 500 was 4,800. The July 2023 high before we had an 11% sell-off was 4,600. Carter used a great kind of way to frame it that, you know, support, and you've done this for, is not an exact point. You know what I mean? Not. So it's something that you kind of fall into, and it's a bit of a range. So that 4,800 to 4,600 number, Guy, it kind of lines up with the midpoint of these mathematically, parallel lines here.
That's right.
And if quickly, if we slide it all with Carter's charts, you'll see he actually, there you go. I mean, he put in the annotations with actual price levels and stuff. So, you know, it makes a lot of sense to me. Again, I'll be the first person to say that, you know, this last few months specifically, but, you know, the move higher has somewhat confounded me. But, you know, here we are, and you have to trade the here and now. And the here and now suggests, you know, Carter's arrows, which were moving, which I don't know how you made that happen. That was remarkable. But, you know, the first level should be the midpoint of this channel, which probably comes in around, you know, 4,800-ish, depending on when it gets there.
Right. And those are all the unfilled gaps below. So certainly the succession of quick gaps that took place in the beginning of this year, one of them has been filled, three remain. Forgetting about the ones lower down, that's another conversation, but at least that kind of thing seems very normal to me.
Yeah, let's look at the NASDAQ 100 through the lens of the QQQ here. And again, you know, maybe they can pull up a live chart for a second, because I just want to kind of like focus on a 1 year for a second. And, you know, why is this important? Well, we know that we have Meta after the close today. We have Google and Microsoft after the close tomorrow. Microsoft's the largest holding, nearly 9% of the QQQ. And then you have to go down to Meta. I think it's like the number five or so at 5%. And obviously, the Alphabet is also a little above 5%. And I just look at that. You look at that, you know, that moving average is just the trend, right? And and we haven't kind of fallen back into that. But if you wanted to even make this a 1 month chart here for a second, and just kind of seeing what I'm seeing, you know, it sold off a little bit greater than the S&P 500 did, which you would expect given the weightings of those big names in there relative to the S&P 500. But if you had a reversal, you know, a continued reversal today, and this thing were, you know, like this little bounce was anemic, Carter, right? For all intents and purposes.
And the relative performance has been very poor, obviously, Apple's being a big part of that poor. But this index also topped a bit earlier in this minor cycle that we're in than the S&P. So an important one to be sure. And we will know very shortly, obviously, after the close today and then tomorrow and finally.
So let's get to your charts, because I think you made a similar sort of topping pattern in, as you did in the S&P 500. This one looks a little different, though.
Yeah. So here we go. Let's annotate it, put some lines in the first chart. So we can flash that for fun, just to put in perspective, rather than going through the whole sequence. I thought I'd just do it in one. But if we look at the prior high, again, this notion that you could just draw a horizontal line and say that's support, that is not how it works at all, right? It is a reference point, and that you can get down to that reference point and then ultimately sink into it. Again, the concept being that it's not a plywood board or a concrete floor. It is a mattress top, and just as a child jumping on the bed on vacation in the motel or hotel or wherever it might be, that you go up and down and you sink into the mattress, right? So support is not right there at that green line. You get down to support, and then quite often you sink into support. Now, what would be interesting, were you to sink into support, i.e. lower than that horizontal green line, getting down to the blue uptrend line would be well into support. And I think that's a perfectly reasonable price objective for the Qs.
Yeah. Let's talk here about this, Guy, because again, you know, we talked about the importance of Microsoft as the largest market cap company in the world. When they report, you know, given what we've seen from some of these tech companies, so Netflix, okay, is 10% of the market cap of that of Microsoft, not particularly important as it relates to its place in these indices. But from a psychology standpoint, it's been a great growth story. They've been kind of pushing a lot of different levers. It's not Gen AI by any means or anything like that. But again, it's about the consumer. It's about pricing leverage and all that sort of stuff. When I think about Microsoft, there's some similar things going on there. Enterprise spending, their investment in generative AI, their ability to monetize it, valuation comes into play. Like, is this the main event this week, aside from some of the economic data that we're getting?
Know, Facebook is its own animal, and I don't want to make any, whether it goes up or down, I don't think that's a tell on the consumer, the economy, any of those things. I think it's very Facebook specific. Microsoft, on the other hand, I think you can start to draw some conclusions. And remember, you know, people have to buy things from Microsoft. I mean, that's an important thing to keep in mind. You know, they are basically selling products, and it's something, you know, you have to take into consideration, because if things were to start to slow down, you know, that whole CapEx cycle, one has to wonder what it means for Microsoft. Trading at 31 times next year's numbers, it's rich compared to itself historically, although it's been trading around that valuation for quite some time. And you pretty much had this unabated move until recently. I think Microsoft is absolutely the bellwether. But quickly, because you mentioned it, I mean, the moves in Netflix over the, I mean, look at just today's move. If you could just do, again, throw a chart up. I mean, the Netflix moves have been staggering. So you had obviously a huge bounce yesterday, and now obviously a pretty big give back today. So this is something to keep an eye on as well, because you're going to have this tug of war here. You know, you could potentially make a little iron reversal to the upside, or as Carter might say, you've already potentially created a bit of an island reversal in terms of that huge island that you see going back all the way to probably early February. So, man, the battle lines are absolutely drawn here in Netflix.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's take a look at Meta here, Carter, because you brought some charts with you. And again, I like the way Guy framed it a little bit. It's like, you know, their use of their own generative AI models and getting, you know, better monetization of their ads. You know what I mean? This is a company that, yes, of course they sell ads, but to your point about differentiating between Microsoft is like their investments in Gen AI, right, and how they're monetizing it. Those are two very different things. So enterprise spending is really important and the like here. This is about their ability to kind of continue to capture share in the ad market and demonstrate better return on that investment for advertisers. So they've been doing a good job of it. That's a big part of that 20% gap when they reported their Q4 earnings. You often say gaps come in twos, at least, right? That sort of thing. So talk to us a little bit about what you're seeing here. You see the implied move about 8% in either direction for earnings.
Right. So the important thing is the gaps are news related. This is elemental. And gaps occur at reference points more often than not. So if we look at a sort of a three-year chart of Meta, and we have it here, that gap that we're speaking of was a reference point. The prior high, it represents a breakout. So let's draw the lines that depict that. And so you have an epic plunge. I mean, you could not have been worse than Meta, right? Whatever percent that is. And then 70, 80. And then it recovers all of that lost ground and then has a news event, an earnings that caused the breakout. We're now right on that trend line to put all the lines together. And you'll see here. So the question is, for me, this is a no play, which is to say it's just as likely to gap again to the upside. I don't know what the implied move is, but I'm sure it's not small. Or maybe give ground here because it's gone up so much. Yeah. I wouldn't play it.
So Guy, you kind of said also kind of a no play situation, 8% implied move in either direction. If for any reason, let's just say, like, you know, Guy, we were looking at Netflix last week, and again, very different company, but we were like, God, they beat their subscriber estimate. It was 4.5 billion. They came in at 9 million. You know, that looked amazing. The guidance wasn't, you know, like that disappointing either, but it was a change in how they were reporting their metrics going forward. And that stock sold off 9%. And then, you know, it's continued its pace lower. If this company is not able to beat and raise in a meaningful way above the whisper, you have to think it breaks that uptrend line and it's going to be on its way to filling in that gap.
Well, which would be, I think, somewhat disconcerting. Again, I have this is a coin flip to me, because on valuation for Facebook, you can still, despite this move, which has been historic, you can still make a pretty compelling case for it. Evaluation obviously is not the only determinant of whether you should buy or sell something, but as a factor, it is a relatively inexpensive stock when you're taking things into consideration. However, if for whatever reason the market interpreted this quarter and the subsequent guidance as negative, and you gap lower, then again, technically, it's going to set up for some really interesting things. And, you know, there are gaps on the downside in this chart as well. So I say no touch. I say let price be your guide. I'll say it just to say it. And if I'm wrong, I'll be back here tomorrow to talk about it. You know, if this thing is not up to snuff, given what the market has come to expect, it could get a little dangerous to the downside here.
Well,
on Facebook.
I mean, And it's about expectations. So right now, consensus estimates are calling for adjusted earnings to grow 40% this year on 17% revenue growth, flat-ish gross margins at about 80%, trading at just under 25 times earnings. And, you know, we say that looks cheap, but in the grand scheme of things, I mean, relative to that growth, it is cheap, okay? Trading about 8 times sales. Massive deceleration expected next year, 15% EPS growth and 13% revenue growth. So trading at 21 times that and 7 times sales, it doesn't look so cheap. So if there is a disappointment causing analysts to kind of lower 2024 estimates, right, and not get it back in 2025, then the stock is entirely too expensive. And so those are the things that I'd be paying attention to. All right, another name. Well, you have a thought on that?
Looking at the this is what it's done the last five quarters, and I mean not what it's reported.
Yeah.
Who cares whether it's a beat or a miss? Who cares?
Price action.
Yeah. This is what it's done the last five quarters, oldest to most recent, plus 23%. Plus 14, plus 4.5, minus 3.7, and the last one plus 20, that gap up. So 4 out of the past 5 quarters, it's been up and up in the teens to 20%. The risk is that it just can't lift that kind of thing again.
Yeah. And again, it's about expectations. So right now, consensus estimates per fact set are calling for what I just quoted, you know, nearly 40% on a gap basis, EPS growth, and, you know, 17% revenue growth. Versus, let's say, let's talk about Google here. Okay. So Alphabet reports, okay, tomorrow after the close. And this is one guy that you would also say is cheap relative to some of those mega cap peers. The sentiment has been kind of poor as it relates to their generative AI products. We've talked about that. But here's an example where the estimates right now for consensus earnings growth is 18% this year, 22% next. So lower this year than the next year. So expecting, you know, an upshift in that. And then on the revenue side, 12% expected revenue growth this year, 18% next year. So it's almost the exact opposite situation as Meta, expected decel in the out year. And then if I look at margins, expected to meaningfully decline in the Google, though, this year to next. So maybe that's talking about some big spend as it relates to generative AI. Guy, how do you feel about this one? 5% implied move in either direction, very near its all-time high. So this has actually shown some good relative strength in the last, call it, couple weeks.
Which makes sense because, you know, if you think about what's happened to some of the semi names over that same period of time, I think it's been a rotation, you know, out of NVIDIA, out of AMD. By the way, we probably don't talk about AMD enough, but you know, you look what that stock's done over the last month, it's been a bit of a disaster. But this is a static chart. If Amanda can throw up a chart over the last, you know, call it 4 or 5 year chart, you'll see this is a critical level. And I think Carter would agree with this as well. I mean, we're right up against it in terms of where we've been historically. So you could say we're through it. Yeah, that's true. But you see what I'm looking at here. This, you know, this sort of 150-ish level is really, really important. So if we were to give it up, you know, you can make a case that we failed at a prior high. Other people say, what are you talking about, guy? We're through that prior high. We're off to the races. I get it. I also look at a moving average that is very lonely down around 120 or so. So I think this is as important a release and important, more importantly, a price, you know, what it does in terms of reaction that we've seen in a while for Google.
So this Meta is a preview of coming attractions, right, for Google, by my work. Let's leave this same time frame and then put it back to Meta. And we know that Meta gets to its former high and then it exceeds it, right? But we'll see this here. In the gets to the high and then exceeds it, breaks out. So Google, in principle, is in a position to break out. Do they always break out? Of course not. But let's go to some charts, some other charts, and we can draw some lines. And we'll see that the reference point, and guys just addressed this, we're not through it. We're not to it. We're at it, right? And so people might say to the guy, no, it already broke out. It hasn't broken out. Going up a penny or two, a dollar. A breakout is something that's definitive. And that's what might be happening and coming with this earnings. But we are at a former high and we're contending with it. Let's put the lines in another way. And so you'll see it here. And one could say, no, that's above. Listen, for a stock of this size and this caliber and this price point, that is not above. That is at, right? Above is a fraction. The question is, will it really get above? Will it do what Meta did? I've got a green arrow there. Notice there was no arrows in Meta. I wouldn't play Meta, but Google, I think you make the bet.
Yeah, you know, and Guy, you and I had been talking about this one on Market Call a few weeks ago. We detailed, you were saying buy the breakout. We detailed an options trade in which to do that. It was a long call spread. It was the 155, 175 in June. And again, if you're like a measured move sort of guy, which I know you are, Carter, if you important. Think about that move from that uptrend to this current level, and I'm just going to use that as an example, you know, if you were to get a 10% move from here, which seems like a reasonable gap, again, we're talking about implied move of 5%, and I would expect some follow through, because this is very different than what we're seeing. Let's just say Alphabet pops, sentiment's been bad, but the company's getting some stuff right. Investors want to load up because they think that at 22 times or whatever, the blended, you know, growth, you know, like EPS rate, PE, have you, you know, over the next 2 years is going to be cheap if they get things accelerating, right? The difference between a Tesla, it was just short covering. You know what I mean? Like the sentiment was really bad. There was nothing good fundamentally causing you to buy the stock. So Guy, this is one that, do you feel like, you said that you think it's a coin flip in Meta, you feel a bit more confident here. The only thing I want to make, one last point before I get your take, is the last two quarters they've reported, the stock has moved lower 9% the next day. Mm-hmm. Big gaps. And that is stuff that had nothing to do with generative AI, that had to do with their core business and the way it's performing.
Yeah, look, that's why trading is difficult, right? I mean, you have to make these decisions ahead of time. It's easy to come on shows and on television and talk about things after the fact and say, oh, it makes sense as to what happened. You know, the difficult thing is trying to sort of game plan for what you think is going to happen. So, you know, I'm sort of with Carter on this one. And again, if Google shits the bed, as they say, and we're trading around, you know, 143 or something, 144, we'll have that conversation. Otherwise, you know, I think this is one where I do think it's on the precipice of making that breakout. And I'll also say that if what's happening in semis is what I think is happening, money will flow into this name specifically. So that's how I look at it.
All right, fair enough. One last name here on the tech front, reports, I think it's tonight after the close, 5% implied move in the IBM. That would be International Business Machine. And you know, it's funny, not a name we talk about a lot. Guy has mentioned it a handful of times. I think you've been kind of, you know, pounding the table on this one. You know, 6 months ago when it was ready to break out, you know, there was that gap on earnings and you thought it kind of turned in time. There was a second gap, as Carter likes to speak to a little bit. You've seen this thing pull back to that gap level after their Q1 earnings. Really quickly, your technical take before Guy's fundamental take.
I mean, I think you have to respect this, right? This is an old line. Think of that. I mean, just to put it in perspective, of course, IBM, just as Cisco is the most valuable company in the world in 2000, IBM was the most valuable company in the world. The Watsons at their height, the family that controlled it, were as powerful or more powerful than Bill Gates or Steve Jobs. Think what they had. Everyone else had typewriters, you know? And so counting machines or Hibiscus or whatever the thing is, you slide the... But the point is, this is something that was left for dead that has really done quite well. Well, and we've pulled this back maybe on a five-year chart, you'll see that IBM has really, after languishing, come to life. My hunch is to play it on the long side.
I agree. You know, we've talked about IBM for a while. It's probably getting a little dangerous here, but I stay with it. I think IBM's done a really... Listen, they were floundering for a long time. Put up a long-term chart in IBM and you'll see. I mean, even go longer term, and this was a sideways action stock forever. And then they finally figured out, hey, we got to get our shit together. And they basically did. They overpaid for Red Hat, but they finally sort of integrated it in an effective way. And they're starting to get rewarded for that. So good for IBM. Is it too much too fast? Yep, maybe. We're up against prior levels. Absolutely. Is this a press here to the upside? All I'm saying is I think this is one you're looking for opportunities to continue to buy the stock. And this is a company that I actually believe in terms of management. And I'm obviously fond of Gary Cohn for a myriad of different reasons. You know, he's taken what, since his arrival, that's when seemingly things got figured out. So I say stay with it, Dan.
All right, cool. A hard turn here. Let's look at Masco. This is a supplier to home builders. And I thought this was a really interesting move here today, Guy. I know that, you know, we've seen some volatility in around some of the home builders and related sectors as rates have moved higher, as the mortgage on the 30 year has gotten above 7% or so. We've been tracking, you know, some of the guidance in the, you know, just the visibility that some of these home builders are seeing in this environment. You know, Masco, again, this is a stock that trades below below a market multiple, you know, expected growth, you know, high single digits at best. You see this sort of really nice move. I think that off the October lows, it tracked the sort of performance that we saw in the home builders, but the sell-off below that uptrend that's been in place since October, and then below that breakout level from a few months ago. I mean, to me, this is kind of no man's land until you get to that moving average there, which is also kind of the low from a few months ago too. So Kai, thoughts on this as it relates to home builders and the commentary we've heard in the rate environment?
I think they're still the biggest supplier to to Home Depot, as you said. I think this is, if you really want to oversimplify, this is as simple as if rates go up, this goes down. And I think to a certain extent, that's what you're seeing. So very economically sensitive name. This is a great, I think, in my opinion, a bit of a leading indicator as to what's going on. And if you look at the chart, it makes a lot of sense. So as this has turned on the back of rates, one has to wonder what the next step is. I think you're right. 65 is sort of going to be the moving average, but it's a bigger story than that, and I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought up the fact that Home Depot is nearly 40% of the revenues. Lowe's is close to 7.5 or so. You know, so you think about that, and you know, maybe they can pull up a live Home Depot chart, and then we can flash back to this one, because I know, Carter, this is one that you've highlighted. Let's go to a one-year really quickly of this. I mean, the way this stock has sold off, you know, of late is definitely particularly interesting. So, like, think about this space in general in the context of charts. It's aggressive.
I mean, the home builders have been such a leading area of the market, mm-hmm. not only from the past 6 months, but over the past 3 and 5 years, not only handily beating the market, but beating other parts of the consumer discretionary space, the sector of which they are a part. In terms of MAS, and we can maybe go back to that chart, Home Depot, I think you probably hold here at the 150-day more of a pair of twos. But there are several circumstances in conflict. After breaking out from those well-defined minor tops, we've returned to them. So we are at a level of support. But again, support is not a very precise level. It's a concept. It's a range. And mm-hmm. so we're now down to support, and we can sink a bit further into support, perhaps as much as down to the moving average. But I don't think it's going to go much more than that. My hunch is here we're down about 13-14%. This is where no one's going to do it, but I would sell naked puts, because here's the thing. The earnings are out of the way. What's going to come next?
Well, anyway. Well, rates to 5%. Guys.
Yeah, you only do it for 2 weeks. But anyway, yeah, that's
no, right. But my point is like, and I think, Guy, you'd probably agree with me that if, let's just say we have, you know, better than expected GDP, we have a hot PCE on Friday, we have a 10-year yield, maybe they can flash up the 10-year right now at 4.65 or something like that, and it's on its way to 5. I mean, there's just very little, you know, by the way, we're going to get a CPI in a few weeks and all that sort of stuff. So at that point, you know, if you're asking how do things get really oversold, well, think back to the last time the 10-year was at 5%, the S&P 500 was on its way to 4150. You know what I mean? And we're right now at 5100, right? And down from 5250. And so I don't know, Guy, thoughts on that? Like, if we do get hot data and we get a move to 4.75, then 4.85, then 5%, won't these home builders continue to get hit? That Home Depot chart, that thing's down 16% from its highs. The XHB at its recent lows was only down 10%. So there's some stuff going on right now that really speaks, at least in the stock market, to the fact that investors are positioning for higher rates right now.
I think so. I mean, I think it is a rate story. I also think, to a certain extent, if the unemployment rate starts to move the way that I think it will, and that's higher, I think that's going to sort of take the wind out of the sails of this trade as well. Look, I'll say it again. I'm one of the few people out there that was wrong for a while, now seemingly right, that thought yields are going higher. I do think they're going higher in small part because, to your point, you know, you have some underlying strength in the economy, but in large part, inflation is still a problem. And I don't think the market's going to react favorably to that. And I think more so, home builders and home builder related stocks are not going to act particularly favorable to that.
All right. Last thing before we get out of here. This is one that I know you've been kind of pounding the table on, Guy, but it seems like in a little bit, this is Caterpillar. You like the story, especially relative to Deere. We have a chart. We have the earnings coming here, 4.5% implied move in either direction. This thing has come off a little bit. You and I detailed, at least I did, a bearish trade idea using options on market call a few weeks ago. Thoughts under the print, because again, this is, as Carter might say, a very, well, a relatively unchecked sort of move that's massively outperformed the S&P 500 since the October lows.
Yeah, and I think this is one, I don't think you're adding to a long position here. I think you're exiting ahead of and looking for a re-entry point. And you've gotten it before. I mean, you can look at this chart. You could put up our, you know, a chart, real-time chart, and look over the last, you know, couple of years. It has not been an unabated move to the upside. There have been moves. There have been counter-trend moves along the way. And personally, I think that's what we're setting up for. So here comes the chart, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. We've overextended what we typically do historically. And I do think there's a very good chance you're going to see it, you know, the back and fill, not to the moving average necessarily, but, you know, 3.25, 3.30. And that's what I would look to reload on the long side. And I understand that's probably, you know, 9-10% from where we are here, but that makes sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, just so far above trend, right? A 60%+ move, so divergent from Deer. They have a lot of relationship over mm-hmm. time. If one's long, I would hedge in some way or trim, do something. But with new money, I'd rather bet on the short side for the earnings print.
And so it's interesting that we just spent a little time on Masco, Home Depot, and the home builders. And again, these are, you know, tend to be cyclical. If you think about Caterpillar, it's tend to be very cyclical. You know, earnings growth expected for this year is flat. It's basically 0%. Okay. It, you know, revenue growth expected to be 3%. Now you could say, well, it trades at 17 times. So that's below the, you know, S&P multiple, you know what I mean? By a few turns or so. But when you think about that performance, it's anticipating a better than expected quarter and a better than expected guide. And so to me, I'm just kind of hard pressed when I think about globally and some of their exposure, right? And some of the things you could say, ah, well, you know, people are, they're going to be reshoring and there's going to be all these factories made and all this stuff's going on and that should be a benefit. The stock market has pulled forward that excitement, in my opinion. So, you know, again, not particularly interesting.
Yeah. And look, I mean, for what it's worth, whether you rely on an individual securities analyst at your favorite brokerage firm, but in, as a group, I mean, you have 25, 30 men and women covering this. They collectively believe their price target, and they didn't just make it up. They've worked hard to come up with that number individually. They didn't collaborate. They collectively believe, it's right here on my screen, that this company is worth $338 12 months into the future. 12 months. It's trading at 363, meaning this group of highly educated, highly trained securities analysts, certified MBAs, CFAs, CPAs, they think it's worth less. Now, are they right? Often they get it wrong, but I mean, come on. That has to be something.
No doubt.
We got a couple of questions before we get out of here, because Jeff Hansen is upset that we never, even though they never read my questions, lol. Well, here you go, Jeff. Thoughts on Uber, even though they never read my questions. I mean, this has been, I mean, this has defied, I would think, my logic to the upside. I mean, it's had a really nice move. It's seemingly rolling over here for the first time in a while. If you're asking me what you are, you know, at $68, I think we go back to what was a prior all-time high of about $61 or so from the spring, basically this time in 2021. It's been an unabated move effectively since earlier this year, late last year. You know, I do think we do a back and fill here, Dan. Thoughts?
Yeah, so sorry about that on the questions, and we will do a better job of that. So we appreciate the questions, so keep putting them in there. And I agree with you, Guy, that breakout was pretty impressive. I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that investors started pricing and analysts, you know, the fact that this company not only just got to being GAAP profitable last year, it's becoming very profitable, right? And so a lot of the negative sentiment around the unit economics with this rideshare business and how they moved into Eats and certain geographies were really bad and the like, you know, Dara Khosrowshahi, the new CEO, took over a few years ago, I think during the pandemic, has done a really nice job. But it doesn't mean at 50 times, you know what I mean, that it's that reasonable of a price. You know, we know they're kicking the butt out of Lyft and some of the other delivery companies and the like here. But I'm kind of with you. I feel like we're going to get to a point where, you know, investors are going to get focused on valuation again, especially in this higher for longer rate environment. I know, Carter, you want to kick me under the table when you hear me say that. I feel like it's a little different this time than the last time we heard it in the fall. But the last point I'll just make is that this company company, since they had that explosion in margins during the pandemic for the reasons that you know why, you're starting to see margins, you know, they bottomed and they're starting to move up higher. So that would be one reason why, if this thing were to get nailed, you know, I think it gets bought.
Yeah. Level. And just in terms of it, in relation to other securities, all of which compose the market, which is just a security index, think of it the same way. From its October low, 40, to its high of 81, it's not up 28 like the S&P or 32 or 60. It's up 100.
Yeah.
And so, okay, you give back a bit. And this give back, the question is, where does it end? Hard to know. The 150-day moving average comes into play at 63. I at 64 or lower, I'd start to add to longs.
All right. Hey, Guy, you know, I'm just going to steal a little thunder here. We have a couple minutes. Can Carter look at NEM reports tomorrow? This has been a name in your complex that you've enjoyed being right about, you know, like you've liked gold, the commodity, you've liked the miners, you've liked a whole host of other players in the space here. This is from Colorblind Collector.
That's a great name. Yeah. You know, Newmont, it's the only stock in the S&P, only gold stock. Obviously, it's not a big name in terms of market cap, but it's has all the elements of an early stage bearish to bullish reversal. Its peak was up at 88 or thereabouts, and we, of course, hit a low here of 30. I mean, look at that wipeout. And what's remarkable is it starts to find its footing right at that COVID low. And now I think it's very asymmetrical. If one is long and one's wrong, it wastes time. It's not 38, it's 34, it's 42, it's 40, it's 39. It just chews you up and bothers you. But if you're right, 50, 60, 80, you pick your number. I like it long. I'm a buyer.
Guy, you liked the GDX a few weeks back, and we detailed a bullish trade idea using options to play for a bounce. I think it had probably a 15% bounce or so, playing a little catch up to the commodity. There it was there. We thought we'd take some profits in that because it was a good little trade, especially after such a sharp move off to a match low, nice double bottom there. How are you thinking about some of these individual names like a Newmont?
Look, I mean, I'm a believer in the miners for sure. I think with gold effectively at an all-time high, with the stock market effectively at an all-time high, you're talking about some of these mining stocks that are 55% from their prior all-time high. So when you hear of Stan Druckenmiller and other people getting into gold miners, you have to take note. And that's what we brought up last week. We're seeing a bit of a back and fill here. It makes sense. The commodity has been under pressure. But I do think there's an underlying bid to gold. And I think the miners are going to, again, they're going to find their footing. And I think they're going to find it right around these levels. So that's Newmont right around, I think that's the 50-day moving at, or 150. You know, I think this is where you add to or get into a long position.
All right, last one before we get out of here. This is from Jay Luther. This is a question that I had, Jay Luther, but you beat me to it. Is there more upside in the Lily? I love that. In the Lily, it is consolidating, or has it peaked? And this is an interesting one because I want to throw this one. Let's throw a one-year chart up of Eli Lilly here for a second. You know, mega trend, obviously the stock's up 100%, you know, in the year. We know why. You see that it's got a handful of gaps in there, but also these nice consolidations, Carter. Mm-hmm. You know, this is one, again, it's a very narrow slice of the kind of pharma space that's really working. But to me, I think there is some risk for valuation, for positive sentiment, for the crowding of this trade. I'm just curious how you see the chart.
Yeah. I mean, this is what a hold is, not Wall Street's hold, a euphemism for sell. Only 5% of stocks are hold, sell rated on Wall Street. The rest are holds. This is a hold. If you have it, you hold it. I wouldn't add to it, nor would I reduce my position. Is that useful information for someone who doesn't own it? Not particularly. So I would want to be present. I'd have a position. And that means if you don't, if you're not involved, get a little bit. But there's nothing here in this pattern other than to say it is a good series of advances and pullbacks and consolidations, and it's neither too hot nor too cold. Hold, enjoy, what's not to like?
Yeah, Guy, hot or it's cold, who sings it? Really quickly, I know you got this one. I know you have
Pearl Jam.
Now, hot and it's cold, it's in and it's out. Katy Perry, yeah, come on, man. And she just took delivery of a Cybertruck, by the way. I saw that on the internet. Guy, thoughts on Lilly, and less about the technicals, but more about, I guess, the sentiment towards GLP-1s, towards, you know, just kind of the crowding and the sort of trade, just thoughts.
It comes down, listen, if you watch Fast Money over the last 4 or 5 years, we were bullish in Lilly prior to anybody ever hearing about GLP-1. So that had been a secular story. They were best in class and they continue to be. The problem now is valuation wise, they've gotten themselves, you know, pretty expensive. A company that's going to do, you know, $50 billion in revenue or something. And, you know, you could look at the market cap now, as opposed to a Merck, which is going to do $68 billion in revenue for the year, that trades at half the market cap of Eli Lilly. I know that's somewhat convoluted, but my point is, you know, in an area that has historically been pretty homogenous in terms of valuations, they've separated themselves in a meaningful way. So I do think at some point there's some mean reversion. I don't know what the headline's going to be. But I don't think you run too far if this thing trades, you know, either side of 700.
Yeah, I kind of feel like if you get it back towards that moving average, which also is that gap and that breakout level, because this story is not changing. It's just what people are willing to pay for it. Do you know what I'm saying? So I'd be a buyer down there. All right. So just really quickly, we appreciate all those questions. Keep them coming. And we're trying to get to as many of them as possible every day. A little housekeeping, Guy, as we call it. You know, you and I are going to be on a plane Monday night after Fast Money. We're going to Miami. We're going to be at the FactSet Focus Conference. We're going to spend a whole heck of a lot of time with some of their professionals, hundreds of their users. We're really excited about that. We're going to be broadcasting Market Call live from down there. So you're going to see a cool little tricked out live setup for Guy and me. We have a very special guest on Tuesday. EY from SoFi is going to be with Guy and myself up there on the stage. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And then if you like what we had to say about all these tech earnings on OK Computer, dropped on Tuesday, I had a great conversation with Deepwater Asset Management and Fast Money friend Gene Munster. We went through all the big tech names and what he was expecting. So my views into the prints and on the way out. So check that out in your favorite podcast store. It's also in the YouTube. You can also find Guy, myself, on the Instagram and Risk Reversal Media. We got a lot of stuff that we preview of Market Call each day on there. You can find us, Guy.Adami, Dan S. Nathan, and at Risk Reversal Media. We appreciate everyone being here. We appreciate Carter being in the studio with us. That's a lot of fun here, Guy. And I'm going to see you.
Almost did an hour-long show, so thanks for sticking around, folks. Thanks, Dubs. Thanks, you. Thank the audience. Thanks, Amanda, Timmy, Jacob, Hawk, all the people in the studio. We'll be back tomorrow. It'll be EY from SoFi and myself, and we'll see you folks later.
See you, guys.